Hello and welcome to Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Craig, and joining me today is David McCookie. And before we get started this week, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what happened last week. We had a bit of a bittersweet episode with Derek and Ben both leaving the show. They were sort of founding hosts, and David and Joe joining the show, which is fantastic. But we sort of ran out of time and were a bit remiss not to mention the fact that we are super grateful to both Ben and Derek for their involvement in Tech Reformation. We have, what's happened has happened amicably and all that kind of thing. And we just love those guys and want the best for them. They have both put in a huge amount. Ben, sort of in bringing the show together and sort of hosting the first season, and then Derek in really sort of managing and running the second season of the show. So we're certainly grateful for them and for their involvement, and wish them all the best in the future. So be praying for those guys. Stay in touch with them. Ben's got a baby arriving in the new year, and Derek's got other projects on the go and busy with his family and children as well. So I just wanted to say thank you to those guys publicly, and certainly grateful for everything they've done for Tech Reformation, and hope that we will be able to have them back at some stage as guest hosts. Thank you guys.
And I just want to say that I am really bummed that just as I'm joining, they're leaving. It feels kind of like when you sit down at the table and two of the cool kids leave, at the cafeteria.
And you're left with the two uncool kids? Is that what
I
you
didn't
said?
Say that. I said two of the cool kids. That implies there are more cool kids. But Derek and Ben don't know this, but I'm frequently going to be asking them to join in as guest hosts, because I feel gypped.
Yeah. So hopefully that will be a thing. Stay tuned. Don't unsubscribe. They're still on the face of the planet, and we'll try and get them back on at some stage.
Exactly. Let's get started.
Cool. So this week we're going to talk about a topic that we've touched on before in a little bit of a different way. Long-time listeners may remember back to episode 27, which was early in 2016, I believe. And we talked about the Apple versus FBI in that episode. And from memory, there was kind of a scenario where the FBI was wanting to be able to hack iPhones or to have some method of easily getting into an encrypted phone to be able to get data on someone who had done something wrong. And so there was a discussion about whether or not they should be allowed to do that. And this week, or over the last week, the Slack listener Brad posted a news article from the BBC talking about Australian data encryption laws that have just been passed quite recently. And from what I understand, these were initially presented in August, but they've been sort of rushed through in December in time for Christmas, with the reason being it'll, in scare quotes, keep Australians safe over Christmas until they can revisit these laws and work out some of the details, I suppose. So one of the articles, there's a whole bunch of stuff you can read on this, but I've taken from a few different articles, a few different points. One of the articles basically summarizes it this way. Australia has passed controversial laws designed to compel technology companies to grant police and security agencies access to encrypted messages. The government says the laws, a world first, are necessary to help combat terrorism and crime. However, critics have listed wide-ranging concerns, including that the laws could undermine the overall security and privacy of users. And so I guess initially, last time we talked about this, I think I remember talking about there's kind of a trade-off between privacy and security. That has certainly come up before. You can't really have it both ways in some ways. You can have something perfectly private and as secured as we possibly know how to make it in terms of communication and sending messaging and attachments and things like that. But if something is 100% private with absolutely no known way of penetrating that, then you've got to be okay with the fact that security in terms of national security may be compromised, because people can then plot things and plan things that are not in the best interests of the population, the wider population. But, you know, I guess the sort of the key question comes down to, should sort of big organizations like governments and security agencies be allowed to basically invade people's privacy in the hope of catching the sort of few people in the population who are out to do the wrong thing in a big way in terms of terrorism and things like that. So a little bit more detail on what this Australian bill is actually about, and then I want to kick it over to David and get his thoughts, because I don't think he's we've touched on this when he's been on before. But the bill is proposing three key powers for the authorities to have. One is called a technical assistance request, where police can ask a company to voluntarily help by giving technical details about the development of a new online service, so how it works. Then there's the next sort of step up is a technical assistance notice, where a company is required to give assistance, so by law. For example, if they have the ability to decrypt a particular communication, they have to, or else they're going to face fines as a result. And then there's probably the most troubling one, which people are sort of most decrying, which is a technical capability notice, which is where the company must build a new function to help police get a suspect's data, or else they face fines. So essentially, you're creating a backdoor, and everyone is saying, hey, if we create a backdoor, we don't then have any way of knowing whether or not someone else is using the backdoor as well as the authorities. And therefore, as tech companies, they don't want to get into that because it's intentionally making their service less secure. So I guess initially, David, what are your thoughts? How does this sit with you? I don't know. We haven't gone into a lot of your political views. If people want to do that, they can listen to the lightest form of flogging. but what do you think about this initially, just from a tech perspective, and also maybe from a Christian perspective? What are your sort of initial thoughts?
Well, from a tech perspective, I think probably the most important thing to note is what tech people have said about this issue all along, even further back than the Apple versus the FBI deal, which is if you build in a backdoor, you're necessarily making something that could otherwise be like 100% secure for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. You're making that not 100% secure. And Apple has said this when the government pressed them to create a backdoor, basically that we can't just create a backdoor just for the FBI or just for the your kangaroo force or whatever it is. If it's there, somebody else can find it.
Yeah.
And that makes things very, I guess, just tricky from a technical perspective, because it would be great if we lived in a world where it was mathematically feasible to have a backdoor that only one party could access. Mm-hmm. But the if you take something like WhatsApp, which a lot of the discussion is centered around WhatsApp, as an example, WhatsApp, I believe, uses end-to-end encryption, essentially meaning that the only two parties that can decrypt a message that's sent are the party that sent it and the party that's receiving it. Nobody on the outside, even though it flies through a bunch of different servers and over the airwaves and all of that, it's all garbled, encrypted mess until one of those two parties that has the key decrypts it. And in that sense, it's a little bit like a box with a key. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you create a bigger key or more keys, then how do you know those keys aren't being misused?
Yeah. And that's where the analogy kind of falls apart. And I'll be honest that I don't understand the math behind it enough to be able to explain why it is that creating a backdoor, causes such a big problem in this end-to-end encryption. Mm-hmm. But suffice it to say, people who are really smart on this issue have come out and said, well, this is how math works. And I think this is one of the frustrating things about, I mean, we've had this problem in the US. You guys are now dealing with it in a much bigger way, I'd say, in Australia, where the people who are making laws frequently, maybe not frequently, but from time to time will make laws about things that they don't understand.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of representative, I guess, of the giant changes that have happened technologically over the last, say, 100, 150 years, because there hasn't really been a time where change has happened so much to the way that people communicate and the way that people live that somebody who's 50 years old in office just can't understand how people are living and how the things that we use to live and to communicate, how those things work. I just got lost in my own sentence.
Yeah. So, well, I know what you mean. Like people who are in governing offices aren't necessarily in governing offices for their tech expertise.
Exactly.
And nor are they able to be expected to be 100% up to date on the latest security, possibilities and also potential exploits, I guess. And that is a lot of the commentary that I've heard from, a lot of people are sort of saying the people who are making the rules are not really fit to be making these kinds of rules with the information that they have at hand.
Exactly.
And so that does pose a problem. And that I guess, causes questions to be raised about governmental structures and, and how much advising. I guess as a standard everyday citizen, I would expect that the government gets good advice from tech companies on this kind of thing before they try and make these laws. But then when you read all the tech companies up in arms saying, what? This is ridiculous. This is reckless. Why would we do, why would we do this? Now Australia is not going to be able to potentially be a big exporter of new tech because we're going to have this stigma attached to the idea that tech developed here might have extra backdoors that people don't know about. So it seemed, what I would assume as a everyday consumer, I guess, of the government, like a citizen within its system, about the way that they would operate in terms of trying to inform themselves and make sure that the decisions they're making are actually in the best interests of the people, doesn't necessarily seem to be the way that it always plays out, which is problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was also just trying to point out that that's historically novel. Like 500 years ago, there weren't things in our lives that required such technical expertise just to make laws on. Mm-hmm. The most complicated situation you might have had was people making safes that could store potentially, malicious or militant materials or I guess guns. Mm-hmm. But while different people have come down differently on these sorts of issues throughout history, it's never been a matter of, oh, well, people just don't understand how safes work.
Yeah. Yep.
Our sponsor this week is Missionalware, your Reformed theology gift shop. Missionalware prints apparel, drinkware, and accessories with beautiful artwork of historic creeds, quotes, and faces of various reformers. Guys, the easiest way to avoid having to small talk with your coworkers at the water cooler is to bring your own water to work. I was just poking around on Missionalware's website, and I noticed they have 30-ounce insulated tumblers with some pretty fantastic designs on them, featuring the aforementioned artwork. I'm thinking of getting one for myself because they look great and can keep you hydrated, which is important. To grab one of these sweet, sweet tumblers, a t-shirt, a Luther bobblehead, or even just to browse their great designs, check them out at missionalware.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God. Thanks to Missionalware for sponsoring Tech Reformation. So here's a question for you. Does Australia do you guys make anything interesting in the tech field? Like, I just don't know.
I must admit, I am not, I'm not deep in this field anymore. I do know that there are a lot of Australian companies that are doing impressive things in the tech space. Just as an example, I used to work for a company that sort of got on to app development really early on, and they've pushed that really hard, and they're doing very, very well at that. That's not creating a new platform, but they are sort of, I would say, leaders in their field. Atlassian is the CEO of Atlassian, I think, is an Australian guy. Don't know counts it as an Australian company. Yes, no, right. Technically it is an Australian enterprise software company. So that's a big one. And he's a sort of a key player that has been asked for comment. I think I read that his reckless was the term he used from memory. I could need to stand corrected on that, but certainly got the impression from what he was saying that he wasn't entirely keen on these new laws. And I know even in the city I live in, they're about to build a sort of a big innovation hub right in the center of the city for startups and entrepreneurs and things like that. So, Yes, we, you know, Australia doesn't have an Apple equivalent or a Google equivalent, but we, I think, sort of hold our own in the tech space and in the, you know, the startup and new ideas space and all that kind of thing.
To be fair, I think Apple is actually headquartered, not headquartered, they're incorporated in Ireland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're headquartered in California and incorporated in Ireland or vice versa. And it's to avoid taxes, basically.
Right. Okay.
Sneaky. But Atlassian, you mentioned, I mean, that's Jira, which developers might know, but that's also Trello. And I could actually see a situation within the next couple of years where Trello is required to let people in, because, I mean, I've never tried to plan a terrorist attack personally.
That's good to know.
But if I did, Trello would be on my list of things like to use for it. Like,
okay. Why do I want to know why?
It's good for like organizing thoughts. I mean, there are a lot of things that would need to come together for a terrorist attack. And
yes, I guess so.
You have the, what is it? Kanban, like a Kanban method.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's raised a few questions for me as well around, just the ethics. I guess we've talked about before as well, the difference between, I guess, American and Australian, or maybe it's just me personally. I don't want to speak for all Australians, but I would say that I don't place a huge amount of trust in the government, that in terms of, I just assume they always get everything right. In fact, I know they don't, and some things they do really sort of frustrate me and I scratch my head and whatever. But I do think that, at least for me, there's more of a sort of trust that things will work out in the wash and they'll generally make decisions that are in the best interest of people. I don't know that it doesn't always feel like Americans have the same feeling towards their government. It seems a lot more volatile, I guess. And here we've got two main parties, the same as in America, there's two main parties. We've got some minor parties as well. But those two main parties in this case have both essentially come together on this issue. One was sort of pushing it through, the other one held it up, and then the other one, and then they talk behind closed doors, so no one really knows what the results of that discussion were. And then they put out some amendments, apparently about 10 minutes before they then tried to pass the bill, 50 pages of amendments, or 50 pages of clarifications or whatever. So the people who were then voting on it hadn't had time to read the material anyway. And so, you know, there's a question mark there about sort of the ethics of how laws are passed, but also, I guess I started thinking about, you know, the biblical, you know, if we're thinking of terrorism, and obviously it's a problem none of us want in the world, we would all like to eradicate terrorism. But how do you go about that? And I was thinking of the biblical sort of requirement for 2 to 3 lines of witnessing and sort of innocent until proven guilty, those kinds of principles at least, to come into play. And I feel like in this sort of situation, my immediate thought process was, if they want to be able to go and decrypt someone's data or even a group of people's data, they should have to have a warrant in place to be able to do that. They shouldn't just be able to say to the company that provides a service to that person, hey, can you change your thing so that I can get at this person who we think might be doing the wrong thing, but we're not actually sure yet. That seems like a sort of a level removed from where the actual problem is being caused. One of the articles did say that Mr. Stanton, who is part of something called the Communication Alliance, described the lack of a warrant framework around the issue of notices under the bill as extraordinary. In most cases, authorities would still need an underlying warrant or authorization to access the actual content of encrypted communications, but not to issue a notice to the tech company. So that's sort of one issue that I think would need to be clarified or made really clear, made really sort of black and white and set in stone before this, if it was up to me, before it went forward at all. And that's not to say I do think it should go forward. But another thing I read somewhere was that individual developers within a company could be asked to do this and not the boss, without the bosses of the company knowing.
Oh.
And that to me is just completely unethical in every sense of business and honesty and, capitalism, even. Like, it's just, it just doesn't seem like a wise way to go about sort of fostering good business relations and employee, you know, well-being and all that kind of thing. It just seems like an absolute nightmare from all respects. So there's a whole bunch of problems with it. And the other thing is that they've said that they won't force any changes to be made to things like WhatsApp, for example, if it's going to be systemic. But the question is, how do you create a backdoor that doesn't create a systemic problem or a systemic security flaw for the right. whole system? How do you create a backdoor that's only for one person? Like, that doesn't seem very, again, it's not clear yet as to how that will work.
Well, and based on how this has gone thus far, it doesn't seem impossible for Australia to come to WhatsApp and demand that they square a circle. And when WhatsApp can't do it, find them.
Yes. Yep.
Like you just said, how do you create a hole in the system without creating a systemic hole? Well, you don't. That's not yeah. possible. But you can demand it, and then you can find them for not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe it's revenue raising. Is that what you're saying? Like, they're creating laws to make money because they know the laws won't be able to be fulfilled without fines being issued.
Well, I was just thinking about this. I mean, if I were WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger or what have you, I would basically create a paid tier. Like, after uh-huh. the first case like this goes through, I'd create a paid tier for encrypted messaging, mm-hmm. and then just figure on paying any fines that we hit out of that encrypted tier money. And if we don't get any fines, yay, that's free money.
Yep. Or, and I guess if you did that, from the tech company's perspective, it may be possible then in the case, you know, to have in the terms and conditions that if, you know, like a lot of companies have in the terms and conditions, we may need to share information about you with a third party if it becomes a legal issue or whatever.
Right.
They may be able to put in provision for, you know, if you are under investigation for some legal issue, your account may be degraded to the unpaid tier, in which case, you know, it's got a lower level of security, and therefore, I don't yeah. know, maybe that would allow more of a backdoor situation.
Well, you'd have to notify them about it, I imagine. Otherwise, you'd have lawsuits.
No, I think you would. I think it would be the same as Facebook saying, you know, your page has been flagged as needing review for hate speech or something like that. It would be the same kind of thing. Your account has been downgraded because of a potential legal issue, which is being followed up by the authorities. So I'm not saying to do that.
They can only do that on, or like messages sent after they make that change, because everything is encrypted. It's not like they can mm-hmm. decrypt it if they're not able to decrypt it. So when they put your account into that state, it would have to be only messages sent after the account is put in that state.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in terms of sort of tying this into how do we think about this as Christians, which I think is, you know, one of the key things that we try and hit on, and we don't always get there. Some things we are just sort of really tech heavy shows. And I'm still keen to sort of hear your thoughts on this, but I guess where I'm sort of landing at the moment is, I don't want this to sound like a cop out. I don't think this legislation is good, and I think it does need a lot more work. And I do hope they come back to it early next year and figure out that it's not actually going to be a good long-term solution. But as a Christian, I keep coming back to the idea that you cannot encrypt or unencrypt the human heart, if you know what I mean. It's like people who want to do the wrong thing, it will find a way of doing that. And so if people know that their messages via these platforms are likely to be able to be read by government agencies, they'll start doing it in person. It only potentially takes two or three people to wreak a fair bit of havoc. You know, we had a situation in Sydney where I think it was a single terrorist held up a, like a coffee shop or a, I think it was the Lindt chocolate store with a whole bunch of hostages inside for whatever it was, quite a long period of time, number of hours at least, if not a day or something. And And, you know, it doesn't, that sort of thing doesn't take a lot of, doesn't seem like it takes a huge amount of coordination. Sure, there are things that would take a lot more coordination to pull off, but I think there are smaller scale terrorist acts that could, that can be done between one or two people. And that might be a conversation on the train or a conversation while walking at the beach or, you know, a conversation in the park somewhere. Like it's just, people's hearts.
We've had codes for a long time now that are used over telephones and, you know, you can text message, just everything is in, you know, some sort of alphabetic code with a simple decoder ring or something.
Yeah. And so if you're already suspected by the police and they're sort of tracking you, and then it may be harder for you to meet up with certain people. But if you're not, and you've got a bent towards evil, then essentially, you know, the way I kind of am thinking of it is the terrorism is completely counter to the message of the gospel. So the best thing that we can do as Christians to counter terrorism is actually to try to reach more people with the gospel. Like that sounds overly simplified, but I don't know how I, as sort of a day-to-day Christian citizen, can do any much more than that. I certainly can't affect these laws. I can write to my local MP maybe and complain via that method. But in terms of what can I do in a more sort of practical sense, I guess, in maybe a more effective, longer term sense, you know, it's probably the best thing I can do is to be more proactive in sharing the gospel in my local situation. And if more Christians in Australia get more proactive on that issue, who knows what will happen to the amount of potential terrorism that could occur. What do you think? Is that too simplified, too rose-colored glasses, or is there another solution you can see?
I think the answer that you're giving, which is we should share the gospel, and you know the church should be about spreading the gospel and converting souls. Like that is definitely a valid answer in terms of like what should be done. And people often bring this up as, you know, well, what can we do to stop abortion? Well, we can share the gospel. And that's certainly true. Like we can certainly, especially with people who we know are at risk of being in a relationship that would lead them down the path toward an abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, we can try to share the gospel with those people. And that's certainly something that we can and should be doing. But the government bears the sword for a particular reason, right? Mm-hmm. The church does not bear the sword. We all agree that your pastor has no business killing people because, you know, congregants serving as congregants of a church have no business putting murderers to death or what have you. But the state, the magistrate or the king, the president, what have you, he has been given the sword by God, and he's been given that sword to restrain public evil, to stop bad things from happening, essentially bad things from happening to people, especially in mass, not Roman Catholic mass, like in large quantities. And so I what I want to say is as Christians, like our job is to promote the good of the church and share the gospel and go about fixing things that way. But if we have the sword in our hand because we are also not just Christians, but also in government in some way, whether that's through our ability to vote or whether we actually hold public office or what have you, like we certainly shouldn't say, oh, well, I'm sharing the gospel and that's the only thing that Christians can do. No, we can pass laws, and having these discussions, I think, is valuable. These discussions shouldn't be the only thing that we do. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not really an either or. I think it's a both and. I think we can have these conversations. Yeah. We can write. We can vote. We can do whatever is lawful on the one hand, and then also share the gospel on the other.
I agree, and I didn't want to sound too reductionistic in what I was saying because I mean, I do vote. I mean, Australia is actually compulsory voting. I don't know. We should probably won't get into that because that's a whole other can of worms. But
that's fascinating.
I do vote, but I see it as a privilege, not just a duty. And I certainly think, you know, I 100% agree. I appreciate the way that Apologia is approaching the abortion issue in America, really tackling both the sort of the law and gospel at the same time. And even, you know, at the abortion mill, you know, presenting the law, you know, telling people the reality of what's going on, but also then presenting the gospel and offering them adoption services and care for mothers who don't go through with abortion, all that kind of thing. And then, you know, the End Abortion Now side of it, where it's more about campaigning with law enforcement and legislative bodies to actually uphold, you know, the value of human life and all those kinds of things. So I think you're right. I think it needs to be a multi-pronged approach. I guess I was thinking for myself, I'm not in public office. I can vote and I can share the gospel. Those are the two main things I can do. But that doesn't mean that I couldn't get more, you know, I couldn't look for opportunities to have some more influence in terms of, you know, campaigning or like I said, sort of contacting politicians and trying to at least sort of encourage them towards a more biblical worldview or a better way of approaching these scenarios. Is there anything else you wanted to say in response to this particular issue?
I guess just that the issue is really complicated. I'm thinking of Paul in 1 Corinthians, where he addresses the issue of Christians bringing lawsuits against each other. Mm-hmm. And one of his objections when he deals with this is it's basically embarrassing that Christians should need to turn to a secular judge to manage these moral issues that shouldn't we be more mature? Shouldn't Christians rather be wronged than have to stoop so low as to have an issue between two Christians be resolved by a secular judge? And it's because, like, we as Christians, we have the Bible, we have the Holy Spirit, we have every possible advantage for sorting out these complex ethical issues. So this has nothing to do with Christians bringing lawsuits against each other, but the reason I bring that up is just because it really seems like the world is kind of in a tumult over this. Like, there's a lot of questions around who should be able to have a backdoor into private messages. What should be done with this new ability to encrypt things? Like, how should all of this be handled? And as Christians, I think we have the best shot at coming up with the answer. So, in that sense, I think conversations like the ones we're having are really important. I'm of the opinion that, in general, the state should not be bullying anybody to make them produce or not produce anything against their will, unless that thing is directly contributing to some public harm.
Mm-hmm.
That when you start getting two or three steps removed, you make a thing, the thing is good, but some people use the good thing for bad, so we want you to make the thing different. That's where I think the state authorities start to lose not their authority, like you still have to comply, but their legitimate legitimacy of their claim. They start to become less legitimate and more of a bully than a protector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a really good point.
In America, we have freedom of speech, like that concept written into our Constitution, and that's what's been brought up again and again to fight these issues, because essentially making a company create something that they don't want to create is a violation of their freedom of speech. Do you have anything similar like that going on in Australia?
I actually am not intimately involved I'm not intimately aware of what our Constitution says. We aren't sort of the Constitution wording is not drilled into us like the sort of amendments are in the American sort of education system. Having said that, yes, I do believe there are some fairly sort of strong laws on freedom of information, opinion, and expression and those kinds of things. So freedom of speech is certainly a thing in Australia. I do think it's come up recently in terms of the homosexual marriage debate. We had a law passed on that not too long ago here that sort of brought us into line with America and some of the other countries that have already gone down that road. And Then we started, I think we sort of saw the same sorts of discussions come up about, you know, well, if you refuse to acknowledge that in your speech as a legitimate marriage, then is that not, you know, hate speech and all that kind of thing? And should the government be allowed to force pastors to do these weddings and all that kind of thing if they're requested and all that kind of stuff? And so freedom of religion and freedom of speech are sort of in the media again in the last sort of 12 months because of that. But certainly, in terms of like long-standing laws and whatever, yes, we do have a freedom of speech is certainly a thing.
Well, hopefully, I mean, I hope that this thing resolves it and you don't end up having to pay for encryption on WhatsApp or however that could end up going.
Like I said, that's my hope. My hope is the government, when it resumes next year, they've just gone on holidays, which is fair, or they've at least ceased parliament for the year. So when it resumes, I hope it is sorted out. In the meantime, I'd be interested to hear from other people in the Slack in episode discussion channel. If you've got any thoughts on what you think, I guess, the best solution is from a government perspective, is it just a flat out no, we shouldn't be doing this stuff? Because like David said, it's too far removed from the actual potential for harm or from the actual people causing harm. Or would you be on board with this kind of thing with the right sort of amendments and provisions in place to make sure it was sort of not damaging it for everyone for the case of sort of restricting evil in just a few? I'm certainly keen to hear from people if they've got thoughts on that.
Yeah. So if you'd like to join our Slack, you can do that by visiting slack.techreformation.com. Do a sign up and we are looking forward to hearing from you.
And you can also find us on Twitter at Tech Reformation. Talk to us there or visit our website at techreformation.com. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening and we'll talk to you next week. And I ain't looking back. No, I ain't looking back.